Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Our guest originally slated for today, Anson Williams from TV's Happy Days. He unfortunately had a conflict of timing. He will be joining us on Friday's show. So make sure you're here. And I know you're thinking, Anson Williams, Potsy, what the hell are we going to talk to Potsy about? He's got some cool stories to share from the set of Happy Days, some supernatural encounters. And this is a big claim, but I'm promising you, if you tune in on Friday, we're going to be saving some lives on Friday as well. What? You'll just have to tune in and check it out for yourself. But be here on Friday. We have a happier day on Friday. We've got great celebrity stories. We've got real paranormal encounters. And we've also got life-saving information. So make sure you tune in with us on Friday. But joining us today, jumping in last minute to help us out, is her encounter with hell. We have Alexis McQuillan on the show. And Alexis is a psychic who never believed in demons until she came face-to-face with pure evil. And she's here to talk to us about her real story. Alexis, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Fascinating aspect, right? Never had a belief in demons. Talk to me a little bit about your background as a psychic. Are you a psychic medium? Are you just a psychic? How do you differentiate your abilities?
I am actually a psychic medium.
Okay, so you can get futuristic information, and you can speak and communicate with the dead.
Actually, my psychic ability lays more in the past. I have psychometry, meaning I can touch an old object or a building, and I see like a movie or pictures of what happened there in the past, or if it's an object, I see things about who owned that object.
Oh, great. So, yeah, so that's the other aspect. Of course, I forgot with psychic, it doesn't always mean future, but it gives you the ability to kind of tell people about things that are part of their past. So, great. Tell me, has that been something that's always been a part of your world, or was that something that came on later in life?
No, I've actually been able to communicate with spirits as long as I can remember.
Really? But what's your earliest memory?
My earliest memory is of a spirit that was in one of my relatives' house, and he had been disabled, and he lived back in the Victorian times, and he had been, you know, they kept people that had mental disabilities hidden in those days, and when his house was torn down, he moved into my relative's second floor because it was never used, and that I used to play up there as a child, and that's where I met him.
When he would appear to you, would he always appear in a physical form? Was it sometimes telepathic, just communicating? You could sense that he was there? Explain that to me, if you would.
It was both. Sometimes I could see him. Sometimes it was just we communicate telepathically. Most of the time I could see him. I think probably because I was little. I was like five. And I think it was just easier, although now I realize how much energy it took for him to do that.
Were you ever frightened by these encounters?
No. No, you know, I think it's because my first encounter that I remember was so pleasant. I don't think I learned fear as far as in that aspect. I didn't learn to be afraid of what I did and the spirits I encountered until, of course, well, the subject of the book.
Now, talk to me a little bit about that, though. You said these first encounters. Were you open with your family about seeing spirit, or was this something you kind of kept to yourself?
I was open at first because I was little. I mean, you tell your parents everything. And then, you know, I know they tried to understand, and I think it kind of scared them. And because I was adopted, I think maybe they thought they'd adopted a child with some problems. So they started taking me to psychiatrists. And thank goodness one psychiatrist really figured out what was going on, which for the 60s was a really big deal. And he said, look, here's the deal. We'll just say you have an overactive imagination. You need to keep this hidden because bad things could happen. People aren't ready for you yet. So I kept it hidden until, oh my gosh, I was probably in my 40s.
But you would still see spirit. Would you still talk to them and communicate with them, or would you see them, acknowledge them, but just kind of shut them out so that you wouldn't be looked at as a freak of nature or a mentally inept person?
No, actually, I would communicate with them telepathically.
And during all that time, you never really had an encounter with any overly aggressive or frightening ghosts at all?
You know, I had a really frightening encounter when I was 15. I was actually sleeping. And I felt like I woke up and something was attacking me, like physically attacking me. And I was really scared. I mean, I, you know, hadn't learned how to control what I do. I didn't know that much about what I could do. There was no one I could talk to. And I was really scared. And I started, to ask God to help me. And my whole bedroom filled up with this bright white light, but it didn't hurt your eyes. And whatever was attacking me, let me go. And this spirit, this energy, this white light took the form of almost a man. And in my head, telepathically, I heard a voice going, just lay down and go back to sleep. You'll be fine now. You'll be protected. And it was like this thing hugged me, and I had never felt such unconditional love or acceptance in my life, and I haven't felt it since. And that was the first time I was really could say I was scared. But then whoever it was came in and rescued me.
Well, that's good. Boy, there was somebody on your side with this.
There's someone on my side. Thank goodness.
Having this ability as well and being somewhat psychic, would you also come into contact with people that would ever set off your senses as though you were dealing with somebody that was very dark, somebody very...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And what is that like for you? I mean, is it an alarm? Is it a screaming? What do you get when you realize that you're in the presence of somebody that's not good?
You know how, like, sometimes your instincts kicked in? Like, you get this feeling in the pit of your stomach when you're in a potentially dangerous situation.
Right.
And you get that fight or flight response.
Yes.
That's how it feels for me when I'm around someone like that. I just get this feeling, you know, like something's going to happen and I'm in a bad situation, even though I don't feel like I'm in a bad situation. But then when I really pay attention and I look around, then I realize, okay, you're in a bad situation.
Right.
So, yeah, it's like an early warning system. But I think everyone has that. You get that feeling in the pit of your stomach that, you know, your adrenaline kicks in and you can't figure out why. But if you really pay attention, you'll figure out why really fast.
And knowing the difference between somebody dark and an entity or an energy that's dark, is there a differentiation for you in that, or is it always that same kind of ick feeling?
No, if it's a dark spirit, and not necessarily, how can I put this? If it's a dark, a spirit that of a person that was once alive, mm-hmm. It's that feeling I get when I'm in a situation that I shouldn't be in. If it's a demon or an inhuman or something really bad, then I get physically nauseous. Like I feel physically sick.
Have you ever had that and then you find out later, you know, this guy was a serial killer or, you know, did something horrific and you were picking up on that vibe before it happened?
No, I haven't had it gone that far. Like, you know, one time I was shopping, I was out shopping and I got that feeling and I couldn't figure it out. And I couldn't figure it out as I'm walking through the store. And then I realized someone was following me. And I went up to someone that works there and said, you need to get security. Someone's following me. And I figured out who it was. And at first they didn't believe me. They said, oh, no, it's just, you know, there's not. I said, no, really, there is. And I pointed out who it was. And once I pointed out who it was, that person ran out of the store. And then they got security. To walk me out
to
my car.
Wow. So that is compelling, especially when you're able to kind of corroborate it. And as soon as they identified, he's out of there.
Yeah. That's happened a couple times in a couple different situations.
That's got to be kind of definitely a mixed blessing and curse, right? I mean, to know that may have saved you from a real problem. But on the other hand, to just kind of be walking around with this vibe and this buzz has got to be somewhat disconcerting as well.
No, actually, I think of it as a total gift because in the couple situations where that's happened, there's a chance I could have been very seriously harmed. So, no, I consider it a gift and I don't ignore it.
All right. And this whole concept of good and evil. I mean, you've encountered ghosts, you've encountered people, you've encountered good and bad on both ends. But your concept of demons, that was something you couldn't buy into?
Yeah, I mean, to me, while I'm very spiritual and I have very strong beliefs, I was never a fan of organized religion. I'm actually still not. And to me, it's man-made, and you don't have to be part of this organized religion and follow their rules to worship God or worship whatever powerful, you know, supreme being you want to worship. You know, it's I worship it in a more truer form, and I was never a fan of it, and to me, demons were something that was invented by the church in their history to keep people in line.
Right, which a lot of people have discussed and right. Kind of follow in that same vein.
It was invented to control the masses.
And how did your first encounter start to amp up? I mean, what was this? Had you moved? What was going on that suddenly you're now encountering hell?
We had moved to a new area, and I didn't know anybody. Absolutely no one where we moved to. And so I went into town, and they were having the Historical Society was having a candlelight walk, and they were going for a walk through town. I thought, well, that'd be a nice way to meet people. Plus, I really like history, and I can learn about the area. And I met this woman there, and we became friends. And the next day she called me and said, hey, come over to my house. And I'm like, great, how do I get there? And she's giving me these directions. I'm like, well, wait, okay, I can't get off this road or main road or I'm lost. So she started laughing. She told me how to get there. So I left my house. I'm driving to her house. And I'm on this, you know, little two-lane country road. And all of a sudden, I felt like I'd run into a brick wall. I literally slammed on my brakes. Thank God there was no one behind me. And I'm like, what was that? And I looked up and I saw this huge mansion. And I'm like, whoa, what is that energy? I'd never felt it before. But I kept going. I went to her house. And the night before we'd been talking about, they'd been talking about the people, the family that had lived in this house and how it was haunted. But I didn't know that was the house. And she said, yeah, let's go to the house. I know the owners. I have the key. It's empty. So we went back. Well, it was the house where I just had that encounter. And, you know, we walked around the house, and it was a huge house. It's three floors, 6,000 square feet. And we walked around the house, outside of the house, And I walked up the porch, the front door, and I put my hand on the front door handle, and there was this large growl, like a big dog, like a Rottweiler, German Shepherd. And I'm like, whoa. And I yelled to my friend, I'm like, do they have dogs? She goes, no, there's no dogs. And I'm like, well, something just growled at me. So we went back around the house. We went in through the apartment of the side of the house, which has an apartment in it. That's the newer part. And then a second I crossed into the threshold of the original footprint, all the energy changed. It just came alive. And in my head, I heard this man's voice going, you know, we've been waiting for you. And I'm like, oh, this can't be good. And the energy just didn't feel right. So we walked through the house and I went down in the basement, and to the left, when you get to the bottom of the stairs, is this one room. It's the only room with a dirt floor. And I walked into this room and it felt so heavy and so oppressive and so dark, and like, what is this energy? Well, it was a long rectangle room, and at the end of the room opposite me was a hole in the wall that went under the front porch. And I went to walk toward it, and something came at me. Like, I couldn't even see it. I couldn't even react, but something came at me. It was this horrible energy. It literally knocked me against the back wall, and everything went white, then everything went red. And I couldn't see. I think it was just red. And I knew I was in trouble, so I kind of crawled my way to the door. And the second I got out of that room, my vision cleared up enough so I could run up the stairs and get out of the house. And that was the first time, even as a ghost hunter, I'd been chased out of a house. And I'm like, no. I'm not chased out of a house. So I went back in, and that's how it all started. And then it just got worse.
Now, the person you're with, are they sensing anything? Are they hearing anything, getting any of these feelings?
No, she doesn't have a psychic bone in her body.
But how is she reacting to the way you're handling this?
She was concerned about me. She said, what happened? And I told her what happened. And she said, you know, funny you should say that, because when her husband and the people that lived there, they were working on the furnace because it wasn't working. And a horrible voice yelled at them to get out, and it scared the crap out of them. So there was something in that room. And she said, well, we need to figure out what that is. And I said, yeah, but not today, because I just needed to recover.
But not today.
Not today.
Now, did you, but you at any time, you didn't see anything dark or malevolent?
No.
Okay.
No, at that point, no. It was just feelings. The first time I saw it, and just, so you know, I mean, because I never run into an entity like this before, I did everything wrong. I'm just telling you now, I did everything wrong. I kept going back to the house because now I was curious. I had to find out what this entity was. And I would go back and I would not provoke it, because I don't provoke anything, but I would just kind of like poke it with a stick a little bit just to see what it would do. Which is really stupid. No one should ever do that. Just saying. And each time it would react differently. Well, I was learning what this thing did. I just didn't know what it was. And then one night we were out. We were actually in the cemetery down the road a little ways. And on the way back, we stopped back by the house. And we got out of the car. And my friend was really big into taking pictures. And she's taking pictures. And all of a sudden I looked up, we were facing the side of the house, and on the second floor between the two windows, it looked like a ring of fire. It looks like a pentagram, upside down pentagram and with a ring of fire. And I said, can't you see that? She goes, no, I don't see anything. I said, you have to be able to see. She goes, no, I don't see it. And then this creature just came out of this pentagram. And then I felt this wave of energy coming at us, and I just looked at her and I went, run. And she went, why? I said, just run.
So you see this creature rising out of a pentagram?
Yeah, a fire pentagram, upside down pentagram.
All right. Talk to me about that. I mean, what is this? And give me the full idea of what the imagery of this beast or creature looked like to you.
Oh, he had the head of a wolf. Big wolf. No horns, just a really big wolf, red eyes, huge teeth. I just saw him from the waist up. And then he almost went into, he was like a wolf-like creature, but he had hooves, not paws. And I just remember his head. I just remember how big it was. And it was dark, and it was furry, and it was matted. And I just remember the teeth. I had huge teeth. And I'll never forget that image as long as I live. That was petrifying.
Did it? Was this an ethereal form? Was it a hard temporal form? What can you explain to me regarding its consistency?
To me, it looked like it was as real as a coffee cup sitting in front of you on a desk. But my friend couldn't see it. So I dropped her off. I ran
home.
But
could she? I mean, you've got something that malevolent in your presence. Could she at least feel something was off? Could she feel a cold spot?
Something was off. I got in the car and she said, you know, there was, I just, it felt really weird. And I'm like, you think? And, you know, so I told her what I saw and she goes, oh, that's not good. And I'm like, no, that's not good. That's not good at all. And
now how was she tied to this house? What was her connection?
Her friends of hers owned it.
And were they aware of what might be going on in this house, or was this?
They were aware. The house had a long history of being haunted.
Okay.
And the couple was in the midst of it. They'd been gutting it to do to renovate it, and in the midst of all that, they ended up splitting up.
Right, that could be stressful enough, but then you add ghosts and demonic
energy. And
right,
for a while, the woman was living in the apartment of the house because she didn't have anywhere else to go. And she would go to the store and buy like fresh meat, you know, like chicken and beef and stuff. And she'd put it in the refrigerator that morning. And when she opened the refrigerator that night to make some chicken or something, there'd be maggots crawling out of the meat or it would be rotten.
Oh.
Ketchup would be opened and sprayed around the refrigerator, mustard, condiments.
Well, that happens at my house, but that's having eight kids. They're just messy.
Oh, yeah, so. That'll do it, too. Yeah. No, she didn't have any kids. So she was just getting so terrified that she finally moved out for obvious reasons.
Right. And did they, I mean, you've got the activity, but do we have any idea why this place would be so active?
Well, you know, it depends on a lot of things. The man who bought it was a very nice man. I can't imagine any of it would be attributed to him. His son was a not-so-nice man. But remember, back in the Victorian days, the occult was a huge thing. They did Ouija boards and they did seances, and that thing could have been summoned and just been laying there for years. And you know, something triggered it to wake up. Maybe it was a renovation.
Why is that? Why do you believe that renovating a home, changing the parameters of it, irritates and agitates spirits so much?
I think that in some cases, like if you have a renovation ghost, which is an actual type of ghost, which isn't a demon at all, it's just a ghost. I think a lot of times their energy has been laying dormant for years in that house. And when you start to renovate, it just changes the energy of the house. It wakes up all that energy. And they don't like change. You know, I mean, if it was, you know, someone that had lived there in the past and was just kind of, okay, popping in and out and being happy with the things were still kind of the same, and then you start to tear apart something they loved, I mean, that'd be enough to tick someone off. But then as soon as the renovations are over, after a while, everything just goes back to normal. So I think it's just the disruption of the energy in the home and the physical, you know, tearing apart of the walls and ripping up flooring and stuff like that, that releases a lot of energy into the house that might have been absorbed into the structure itself.
All right, help me out with that then, because I'm having trouble with that aspect of a haunting. For God's sakes, why do we care as a ghost what happens to the cemetery our bones were buried in? Why do we care as a ghost that somebody is tearing down a wall and putting in an island in the kitchen? To me, it just seems like the pettiness and that aspect of our nature would be gone once we've left the physical mortal plane. We're on this ethereal realm. Why so much aggression that way?
I think with some spirits, you know, because a lot of spirits return to places they loved when they were alive.
Right.
And if they lived in a place for 30 years, they, you know, things were one way. That's just how it was. They got used to it. That was their routine. And I think that by changing or renovating that structure, it's a change to them. It's like someone's trying to tear down something they loved. I mean, think how violently you react. You know, so you worked for this all your life, and now someone's tearing apart something you loved. And I know in some cases that the past owner didn't know they were dead. And they're terrified. They're frustrated. I mean, all their stuff is gone. Strangers are living in their house. They're tearing their house apart. They don't realize they're dead. I mean, they can't communicate. Think how frustrating that would be for a spirit.
And I get that aspect of it, but are we completely stranded here, Alexis, once we die?
No.
Right, so why don't they move on? Why don't they go to the light after a certain amount of time? You know, why don't they start to dissolve and just dissipate? You would think the energy, not being strong enough of being acknowledged, would eventually wear them out and create them to go away.
Because they can absorb the energy of the house. Think about it. You know, that's why a lot of ghosts manipulate electrical appliances. All that's energy. There's the energy of the living in the house. You know, like cold spots in a room, it's because a spirit is sucking all the energy out of the room because they want to either manifest or do something. So all they're doing is absorbing energy. Energy reacts to energy in their energy. So, you know, a lot of the spirits I've encountered, they died. They went into the light. For whatever reason, they choose to come back now and then just to check on things or check on a loved one or, you know, there's 100 different reasons. And then they come back and they find out their home is being renovated. And in some cases, they get really ticked off. You know, I can't explain it any better than that. That's just how they are. Some of them, they could care less. You know, and some of them are like, oh, I'm so glad someone's doing something with the place. But it still doesn't mean I'm not going to mess with them. Sometimes renovations release all that energy that's been stored up in the walls or wherever. And a lot of times it's not a ghost at all. It's just all that energy, which would be a residual haunting, where it's just the energy, not a ghost.
All right, but in this case, we're not dealing with just some pissed off landowner that is irritated. We're dealing with something darker, a beast, kind of a monster. Our guest today is Alexis McQuill in her book, Encounter with Hell. And we're going to have that book linked up on our site. If you go to darknessradio.com, click on the Killer Deals link. It'll take you right into our Amazon page. We will have that book featured so you can order a copy and read the full story for yourself. All right, Alexis, this beast, this creature, do we have any idea, again, why this property would have this creature attached to it? Is it just speculation, or do you have a pretty good understanding and knowledge of why it's there?
I have studied that family for the last 10 years. I cannot explain why that creature has decided to take up residence there. Decided to take up residence there. The house itself is gone now. All I know is that it was there. And, you know, once it showed itself to me and once I figured out who it was and what it was, through the help of a friend of mine who happens to be a demonologist, he told me to describe what it will look like, and I told him. He said, oh, yeah, you want to stay away from there. That is Amon. He is a lower prince of hell, and he commands 10,000 legions. Now, keep in mind, each legion of demon, according to him, he commands, I think it's 30 legions. Each legion is comprised of 10,000 demons. So do the math.
Now, this guy's just saying this so matter-of-factly to you, and you personally didn't believe in the demonic realm. Does this guy just sound like he's batshit crazy when he opens up and tells you this?
Or no, because I've known him. I'd known him for a long time, and
okay.
I trusted what he told me. And he said, "You need to stay away from there." And I'm like, "No, I need to get rid of this." And I said, "How do I do that?" And he goes, "You need to figure that out on your own. You have to figure it out on your own."
Well, wait a minute. So he's got all the knowledge on the demonic realm. He knows that it's there. He knows what you've got to do with. But then it's this kind of stupid enigma, these puzzles the supernatural throws at us. Well, now it's your problem. Well, screw
it's your
you.
Problem. You need to figure it out.
Right.
And
did you tell him no? Bullshit. Tell me how to fix this thing.
See, he said I would suggest not going back.
Okay. And that was the best he could offer you. This house has got a very powerful level demon in it, and it knows about you now. But my only response to you is just don't go back. But if you want to deal with it, you're going to have to figure that out on your own.
Yeah, well, of course I didn't stay away. Why would I? Now I know what it is.
Right.
Now I'm more curious than ever. Another stupid move. And so now I have to go back. And you know, they say that you should never speak a demon's name because it makes it more powerful.
Right.
Right. Well, I think the opposite is true. I think that once you know the demon's name, I think it gives you power.
That's a possibility.
I think it gives you some measure of power.
Okay.
Because, from everything I had read, in an exorcism, the last thing the demon will give up is its name.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why? Why? So to me, logically, if the last thing a demon is going to give up is its name, then the fact that you know its name must give you some power over it.
Okay, I can buy that. And I know we've heard that from some of the other demonologists and experts that we've had on the show, that knowing the demon's name gives you some authority and helps you to defeat it. But again, you're taking the word of this guy. How does he know who the demon is? What did you question him? How did he realize who this creature really was?
He apparently has all these books on demons and demonology, and he did some research for me, and he thinks this is who it was. And I'm like, okay, I'll go with that. That makes sense to me. Because it's very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I went back. Who wouldn't, right? Because now I know its name. And I walked in that house like I owned it. And I said, okay, I know who you are. You're Amon. You know, I know who you are. And I was just so proud. I just knew who he was. And I said, this is going to stop. You have to stop. You have to leave me alone. And I walked out thinking, okay, that's going to end it. No, then he started to come to my house and attack me.
All right, with that, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue with Alexis's story and how it begins to amp up and start to ruin her life. It leaves the home now that she knows the name, thinking she's this powerful human entity that can now confront this creature. It seems to have set out to prove to her that her power is not as strong as she once thought it was. We'll deal with that when we return to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
This is An Encounter with Hell. Our guest this evening is Alexis McQuillan, talking about her face-to-face encounter with evil. Now, you've gone into this house, Alexis. You've had experiences. You've sensed something dark. Your friend has given you the name of what he believes is the demon in charge. You go in and challenge. First of all, why would you go in and challenge something you believe might actually be part of the demonic realm? What was the thought process behind that?
I don't think there was one. I honestly don't.
Just human ego and
I don't even know if it was ego. It was just, I think I was just so happy to have an answer as to what this entity was.
Did you feel like it was your job to oust this creature?
Well, yeah, at that point, I think I kind of did. I think I felt, because remember, during this whole thing, this is over a period of 3 or 4 years. During this whole thing, I would take friends of mine by the house. I wouldn't take them in. I'd take them by. And when I did that, things started to happen to them. Like a couple days later, they would get really sick. Someone in their family would get sick. There'd be a car accident. So I was just starting to think, you know, I might not take people. I just wouldn't take people by the house anymore.
How many people did you take there that had bad luck before you decided that?
4.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
And that I wouldn't talk about it anymore. And what the demon was doing, which I didn't realize at the time, because remember, at that time I didn't believe in them. I didn't know anything about them. It was isolating me. So the only thing I had to turn to was it. That's what they do. That's how they operate. But at the time, I didn't realize that. And by the time...
Well, when you challenged this thing first, when you challenged this thing at the house, and did it respond? Did it make a noise? Did it growl? Were there thumping sounds? Or did it just seem to be hiding away when you started calling it out?
No, it amped up its energy. It didn't come at me.
Mm-hmm.
But I could feel its energy amping up. And I said, oh, I'm not sure I should have done this. I better... And I left. And then it started to attack me. It would come to my house and it would attack me. My husband would get up. He'd leave for work. I'm awake. I'm just kind of laying in bed going, oh, I got to get up. I got the dogs out, whatever. And all of a sudden, one of the dogs would start to bark and just go insane. The cats would freak out. And the next thing I know, something is holding me down on my bed and I can't get rid of it. And this happened 3 times and I'm like, okay, that's enough.
Now all right, now hold on. Is this something that most of us would refer to as sleep paralysis or were you awake?
No, I was awake. I mean, I had been up. I had been out of bed. I had just gone back to bed for a couple minutes just to kind of, you know, hang out and read or, you know, just, I just, because my husband left for work really early in the morning. I just wasn't ready to get up and do much other than have a cup of coffee and let dogs out and stuff.
Sure.
And sometimes I was just laying in bed reading. I wasn't asleep. During any of the attacks, I was not asleep. And I said, okay, this is enough. I have to figure out how to get rid of this thing. And, I'd been ghost hunting a lot of years. I knew a lot of people. I started to check with some people I knew. And one of them sent me this ritual. They said, this will work. You need to do this. This will get rid of it. Or at least he'll keep it away from you. And I'm like, okay. So I got all the stuff I needed. I went over to the house, let myself in, was doing this ritual. I could just like feel it working. I can't describe it other than that. I could just feel it working. I could feel the energy changing. And then I stopped. And to this day, I don't understand it. I just stopped in the middle of it. I said, I can't do this. And in my head, I heard Amon say, you stopped. And my response out loud was, yeah, I stopped because if I destroy you, I'm no better than you are. And I'm way better than you are. And I said, but this ends here. And I walked out of the house. And that was kind of it for a while. Every once in a while, it'll show back up, we've since moved again and it knows where I am. And every once in a while, I'll be walking through the house and I'll kind of feel its energy and I'll go, yeah, I know you're here. I'm not afraid of you anymore. And it'll go. I was at the grocery store one day. I stopped for gas. It was raining. I'm under one of those canopy things. The rain's dripping down on my windshield. I'm pumping gas. I get back in my car, and written in the rainwater across my windshield was the word Amon. And I'm like, that was cute. And they tore down the house. I figured out that that hole in that room probably was its nest. And when they tore down the house, they didn't take out the basement. They only filled it in. And since then, there are four houses built on that property. And I'm dying to know if they're having activity. Because I know they went into the side of that basement.
So how does a demon start to nest in a home anyway? I mean, what is it, just because the energy is drawing it there, because the activity, the human lives that are there, and it's just feeding off of what it's doing to them?
Because at the time that my thinking is the time that it came there, because the original front of the house was three floors, 1,000 square feet on each floor. When the house was sold and a three-story addition was put on the back of the house, it was turned into a bed and breakfast, mm-hmm. which was another 3,000 square feet. The entities in that house, and the demon wasn't the only one. There were other entities of the family that had lived there, et cetera. They never would go into the new part, which means they weren't acknowledging that addition, which kind of told me that they were there the time the original footprint was there. Because they would not go into the addition. That was like the neutral zone of the house.
So how exactly did you go to battle with this? I mean, if it's just kind of, you're just like, yeah, I'm done, and then it just leaves you alone, it seems like it's not that powerful of an entity or demon to begin with.
I think because it knew I at that point, could have gotten rid of it. So I think we were almost at a stalemate.
But why would you quit? I'm just curious. What?
I quit at that time. See, when I was trained, I guess you could say, my mentor was a gentleman from Wales who was a druid. And the ways I learned were very gentle, very soft. I don't know how else to describe it. I just wasn't trained to do battle like this. I wasn't trained to destroy. And I just couldn't do it. I just, something stopped me. I just, even in its own pathetic way, even though it's known as a, you know, inhuman, its own pathetic way, it has a life. And I just, I don't know, at that time I couldn't do it. Now, if it came back now and started to threaten people, oh, it'd be gone in a heartbeat. I wouldn't hesitate. I wouldn't hesitate at all. But at that point in my life, I think maybe I just didn't even realize the magnitude of what it could do at that time. I just stopped. I just didn't. And
do you feel guilt about that, knowing what kind of damage it was doing to the people that you'd introduced it to? Were you worried that by just giving up on it, that could be a death sentence for someone else?
I did feel guilty about it, but in fact, I still kind of do. I wish I had gotten rid of it. But I know that the people that were affected by it at that point in time are all safe. They've gone on with their lives. They're happy. There's nothing going on with them that even arouses any type of suspicion that this creature's around them. I think if it does come back, and the house, you know, it stood empty for so long after that, and then it was torn down. I mean, it's entirely possible that it moved on because it needs energy to feed. It has to feed. And there would have been no energy in the house for it to feed on. So I remember when it was torn down, I walked the property a couple times and I didn't feel any signs of him being there.
So do you think, though, being that powerful, couldn't it hide from you? Couldn't it leave the property until you're nowhere to be seen and then make itself known again?
I think it's possible. Anything's possible. I can't imagine it going back there, although it's possible it could. I mean, you know, I go by regularly and check on everything, and it's not there. But yes, is it possible? Yes, it's entirely possible. Could it be somewhere else wrecking havoc on someone else's life? Yeah, I'm sure it is. And that's what I feel bad about, is that I had the chance and I didn't take it. But at that time in my life, I had never gotten rid of such a powerful entity before in my life. I had no guarantee it was going to work anyway.
Well, how do you get rid of an entity anyway? I mean, if we're just, let's not even talk about the demonic realm, but let's say you've just got a nasty ghost that's kicking around and causing havoc. What do you do to get that spirit out of the house?
A lot of times I do what I do. I'm trying to negotiate with it. You know, every spirit's there for a reason. Every spirit needs something. So I try to figure out what it needs or ask it what it needs. And if I can give it to it, I will. If not, I have a ritual I use. It's like a binding, cleansing, banishment ritual. which to use on a malevolent spirit is kind of like using a sledgehammer to kill a cockroach, because it's meant to get rid of demonics, but it works. Have I used this on a demonic? No. Do I know it works for a demonic? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it will. But I know that it works for spirits. If they're not a malevolent spirit, if they're kind of a friendly ghost or a nice spirit, you can usually negotiate with them and say, what do you need? What is it you need to get you, to make you move on?
And what do they usually tell you? What does a ghost need to get them out of your home?
You know, the thing I run into the most frequency, which kind of surprises me, is that they are afraid of moving out because they're afraid of being judged by God.
All right, so it's just the judgment aspect that leaves them
it's
here.
It's the judgment acts. I mean, the spirit.
Well, don't they realize then by acting like jerks, they're not making it any better for themselves in the afterlife by being ghosts that are scary?
I've explained that to them. And go, you know, this isn't doing much to get you, brownie points. And they're like, I realize that, but, they're so frustrated and they don't know what to do. And they want attention and they want help. And sometimes you can get them to go by assuring them it'll be okay. And sometimes, you can't. You have to do the ritual. And I try not to do it unless I have to.
And once you do that ritual to a ghost that does not want to leave, where are you booting it out of the house? Is it then forced to roam the streets? Or are you sending it somewhere?
No, I'm usually trying to send it into the light.
Okay.
I'm not just like trying to get it out of the house and let it roam the streets, because it's not going to do that. It's going to come right back in the house. I mean, they're not stupid. They go, well, when she leaves, I'll just come back. Not a big deal.
Right. I didn't know, though, if there's certain binding ceremonies that will keep the house clear of them returning.
I suppose there are. I don't use them. My goal is just to kind of bind the spirit, to keep him controlled, till I can get him into the light. And I try to send as many as I can into the light. With a demonic, I'm not sure where it would go. It'd probably go back to quote-unquote hell. My goal is just to, I try to help as many spirits as I can and help the people that are living with them. Sometimes the people don't want the spirit to go. I mean, if it's not a bad spirit, they just don't want it to go. They just want to know why it's there and what it wants. And I know a few people that are cohabitating very nicely with spirits, and the spirit's content and they're content. And that's fine if that works for them. I mean, I've done that personally myself. So if it works for them, fine. I just want to make sure that the spirit's not being held there against their will.
Alexis McQuillan, our guest, as we're talking about her encounters with hell and a demonic being. Since that time, have you encountered more of these creatures that you would truly call or consider to be part of the demonic realm?
Since him, I've encountered one.
And when you faced off against this one, were you more confident because you'd gone into this before, or were you more reticent to go against it because of what you dealt with before?
No, I was actually more confident because I had a better understanding of what demons are, how they operate, how to deal with them. I didn't use the ritual I was talking about earlier on it. I used a different ritual, and I was able to get rid of it for the family. I'm expecting it may come back, though, because the property that the house that we investigated was on used to be the site of a satanic cult that operated in that area in the 60s and 70s. And there are somewhere on the property, which we were not able to find only because of darkness and because it was 40 acres, is the foundation of the church that that cult operated in, which is why I think the demon went into that house anyway, because it needed to feed and there was energy there. And it's been 10, 12 years, but I just have a feeling that it may come back just because of what's on the land.
Why do the demonic seem to have such an interest in roaming about harassing people? I mean, it seems like if you're really a demon, you could do a hell of a lot more damage in a much shorter amount of time. Why the torture? Why dragging things out? If you're after the soul and suicide, why not just go to crazy people, push them to this point, push their breaking point?
But who says they haven't? You know, look at all the poor people that are in some type of mental health facility and they're written off as crazy or the ravings of a lunatic. And what makes you think that it's the ravings of a lunatic? You know, what makes you think that maybe they aren't under some kind of, some of them, not all of them, of course, but a few of them may be under some type of influence.
Right, but if they're truly the demonic realm, again, why the toying and the torture? Why not just, if the idea is to kill them and to get their soul in their kind of charge, why not just push them to suicide, push them to do these things? That's where it starts, like you, I'm sure when you were starting off in this, very cautious in believing about the demonic realm. It just seems to me it's a lot of games. It's a lot of silliness and wasted time for such
it
power.
It is a lot, but that's how they operate. I mean, think about what they have to go through. You know, they have one rule. There is a rule among demons, and it's one rule. And they take it very literally, very, very literally. And that is they must be invited into your life in order to take it over. So let's say that you're someone who buys a house and you move in and there's paranormal activity going on and you don't realize it's a demon. You just think it's, you know, a ghost or you're not even sure what it is at that point. If you don't leave that house to the demon, you've accepted it into your life. That's how literal they are. And why they toy with people, why they don't just get on with it, I don't know. I can't answer that. I honestly don't know. They are masters of psychological warfare. Probably more than physical, although they are capable of great physical violence. I found, at least in my experience, it was more of a psychological thing. Like they somehow know your deepest, darkest fear. And that's what they're going to go for. Like my deepest, darkest fear at that time was my friends. You know, don't go near my friends. Leave my friends alone. I have to protect my friends. And that's who they went for. That's who it went for. It went for my friends, my deepest, darkest fear. Because that's how they isolate you. And once they isolate you, which does take time, by the way, the only thing you have left, what they want is it for to be the only thing you have or the only person or thing you have left to turn to is the demon. That's what they're after.
All right. And then what do you turn to the demon for? What is the purpose at that point?
Because you're so obsessed with what's going on and you're trying to make yourself believe you're not going crazy and you don't want to talk to anybody about it because you've already learned, it's already conditioned you to believe that if you talk to someone about it, I'm going to go after them and I'm going to hurt them. So it's just like there's a big web and you're the fly and it's the spider and you don't realize you're even caught up in it or what they're doing until it's almost too late. And that's what happened to me. Like, I didn't realize what it was doing until it was almost too late. I was totally isolated. Totally isolated. Could not talk about what was going on with this thing to anybody because I was afraid it was going to go after them. And I didn't want that. So the only thing left I had was it. That's all I had left.
What can you tell me? I've had a lot of listeners send me in questions regarding the spiritual realm about children's ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know about children's ghosts? Are they real? Are they a thing?
Most of the time children's ghosts are real. They're children. Children die, unfortunately. Most of the time they are. The big thing I hear is, well, my child has an imaginary friend. Those are the ones I worry about. I worry about imaginary friends. So I think what people need to watch out for is if your child has an imaginary friend or if there's a child ghost, is it misbehaving? Is it your child's imaginary friend telling it to do things it knows are wrong? That type of thing. Those are the warning signs I watch out for, especially with my grandchildren. Because my grandson has a quote-unquote imaginary friend, which isn't an imaginary friend at all. That's why I keep talking to him about it.
Can you sense it when you go there? Do you know what it is, and do you try to push it out?
I don't sense it. They live in Texas. I'm in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not there a lot. I'm there maybe once a year. So I really can't do that much from here. I think it's gotten better. I think I've been talking to him a lot about, making it. I think your friend needs to leave, although it's not telling him to do anything bad. It's not telling him to misbehave. It's not telling him to hurt anything. So maybe it is just an imaginary friend. Maybe it is a little child ghost. But so far, it's not doing anything that has raised any alarms with me. But I do him, myself and his parents, we keep very close tabs on it. And the second this thing, this child ghost or imaginary friend starts to do something that raises alarms with me, then I'm going to be on the next plane down there and it's going to be gone.
Give me, if you can, your top three. What should people look for? We have so many people that are worried they're dealing with a demon, and oftentimes I can talk them out of it when I discuss it with them, because I'll tell them, if you think you have a demon, you don't have a demon. That's my theory. If it's a demon, it lets itself be known. But,
well, in some ways. But remember, they have to work their way into your life and be accepted.
Right.
So at the early stages, it could be, it could not be. The three things to watch out for is, if you think your house is haunted, a demonic haunting is like a normal haunting on steroids. You're going to know. You're just going to know. It's horrific.
But a lot of people just know. That's my fear, is because people are so quick to jump and they watch all these movies and TV shows and there's a demon.
I found as a ghost hunter, the hardest part of my job is talking people out of the belief that they have a demon.
Right.
And
So I just want you to, people get scared easily and a ghost can be frightening. So what are some high points? I mean, is it always the smell of sulfur and rotting meat?
Not always the smell of sulfur. I would look for, how does it make you feel other than scared?
Mm-hmm.
Like, really stop being scared and think about how it made you feel. Did you feel fight or flight, or did you feel, oh, that just startled me? Or I wasn't expecting that. Okay, it's a big difference. Pay attention to your gut, like your gut feeling. Is something telling you, this just isn't feeling right? Does the air in your house feel oppressive? Does it feel dark? It almost feels like there's a weight on your shoulders. Sometimes it can feel really hard to breathe. Even you don't have to be a psychic medium to experience that. It happens all the time. Make sure that thoughts you have, if you think you have a demon, make sure the thoughts in your head are your own and not something else putting them there. Pay attention to your dreams. A demon sometimes will try to influence you in a dream or try to talk to you when you're asleep. So pay attention to those types of things too. Keep a journal, keep a logbook of what paranormal activity happened, where it happened, what happened, who was there, what the reaction was, how it made you feel, how it made any witnesses feel. That's a big help, especially if they plan on calling in a paranormal researcher. To have that journal is invaluable because then a lot of times a paranormal investigator can see a pattern. And it might help them figure out what's going on a little bit easier and faster. Obviously, if it's being violent, I mean, if you're waking up and or someone in your house is being scratched or choked or levitated or thrown down the stairs, yeah, get help and get out until you get help.
I feel like we need Jeff Fox or the "You might be dealing with a demon."
Yeah. You know, watch how your animals react to it.
Okay.
You know, like I have cats. Cats are my early warning system. If a spirit comes into my house, which they do frequently, my cats might just look up and just kind of tilt their head like, oh, okay. And then I sense the spirit. And I'm like, okay, it's not here to hurt anything. It's just like passing through or whatever. Fine. But if my cats stand up and fluff out and take a defensive posture, I know I need to pay attention.
Fair enough. Alexis, thank you for coming on and sharing some time with us. Encounter with Hell is the name of the book, A Terrifying Clash with a Demonic Entity. We've got a link up to that book. If you go to darknessradio.com, click on the Killer Deals link, you'll be able to find it. It's also posted right here with our podcast. So if you click on that link for our Amazon page, it'll take you there. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.